going to the same time. Because until there is a potential of honorable members extending their stay. As we start this meeting, we don't form a quorum, but we'll have to continue because we are just dealing with presentations. But I think it's an issue we deal with at the relevant level. There's one thing that I believe in, is that it doesn't help to preach to those who are in church when the actual culprits are outside church. So I can't tell honorable members what we are expected to be doing here when they are here to do what they were supposed to be doing. But I think it's an issue that we will have to take up, both at the level of the committee, but also at the level of where we come from, each one of us. Because there is a purpose and a reason that all of us were here. So I don't believe that there is someone who is here by condonation. We are here because we were supposed to be here. So thank you very much. Let me start with the last issue. Honorable members, you will receive the minutes, but we are not going to be dealing with the minutes because we don't form a quorum. Two, depending on the progress of the day, between now and Friday, we will have to adopt the program so that we don't work from the sky. We work on a program that determines what we do. So it requires the committee to adopt its own program that is working on. So unfortunately, at this stage, we are not going to be able to do so. On that note, can we get any apologies that, in my own way, that I understand this committee are great?
Good morning, honorable members and guests. We've got apology from honorable Daga. She is sick. Honorable Mandela is for engagement in the week. Honorable Malema, he will not be able to attend the committee meeting this week. And honorable Exteven, due to other commitments.
Okay. We've got no choice. We note. In the absence of the apologies, we have our honorable guest. Even if they drink water, I made sure that there is something that they take. Yeah, I don't want them to talk about wasteful expenditure. At least they can talk about wasteful expenditure as participants into it. We've got the AG honorable members, as agreed initially. You will recall that at that point, I think when we submitted that program, we did not have the AG. But subsequently, that's the only addition on what we suggested initially on the program. After the AG, we will then get questions of clarity on their submission that they would have made to the committee. Then our honorable doctor, Dr. Nicole, who is the researcher of the committee, will then give a perspective in relation to the work of the department, and subsequently then we will have to go for a tea break. After that, we will receive a presentation from DMR, which goes up to 4. That's in terms of the programs that that they have. And then in between, it will be punctuated by questions of clarity. We had intended to suggest then that not at the end of the meeting, towards the adjournment of the meeting, we then adopt the program for this committee. That obviously will be subject to us correcting. I'm a little bit convinced that with the apologies that we receive, although we might be needing only one person to correct, if we continue like this, it means we'll be a listening committee. But I don't think it stops, at least I started the rule book, that it doesn't stop us to ask questions of clarity and so forth. But in the final analysis, in terms of what the program entails, what I think we should do, honorable members, is that if we are unable to meet the quorum, then I think for those honorable members that are present with the submitted, we will then have to rerun the entire program that is suggested for the committee so that we can get a sense of that program, if there are any issues that they might feel. But let's deal with that issue when we are finalized with the presentations for today. So I think that is the issue. AG, let me make this apology again, that it happens that I'm not sure there's a cost-saving exercise or another wasteful expenditure. You can decide that we don't have the bioscope for now. But we are given documents in front of us. Rather than to look up on the sky, we must look in front of us. So we will do with what we have. We would have a problem if we did not have the projector and we don't have the document. Probably maybe it's to our advantage that the projector is not working, so that we can concentrate on what we have. But as soon as they are ready, I'm sure then we will be able to fly it. I just hope that Secretary, all what is going to be presented today is available all members, so that if the projector is not working for the whole day, we don't get a problem of now having to go and wait for printing. So if there's any honorable member who doesn't have the presentations, one by AG, two by Dr. Nicole, the researcher, three by DMR, please speak to the secretary so that you can access that information. AG, why are you missing?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. I'll start by introducing the team from AGSA. My name is Margaret Sioka. Let me also apologize. I have a bit of a flu, and the plane didn't do justice yesterday, but I'll try my best. My name is Margaret Sioka. I'm the senior manager on the audit. I wasn't involved with the audit for the 2013-2014, but the team has briefed me on the audit outcomes.
On my right is Stephen Maluleka, who is the manager on the audit. And then on my left is Yasin Jiwa. He was the acting senior manager on the audit. So I understand he came to make a presentation in the committee previously. What I'll do, I'll make a presentation on this document that was circulated. It says briefing to the Portfolio Committee on Mineral Resources. Is this presentation now? Everyone has the document. On the second page is basically our reputation, promise, or mission, which I will read. The Auditor General of South Africa has a constitutional mandate, and as a supreme audit institution of South Africa, it exists to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through auditing, thereby building public confidence. Basically, the key word that we can take for the purpose of today's presentation is the word enabling oversight, which means by doing this presentation, we'll be providing you with information which will assist you with the role of oversight, which is also supported by the next slide, which says the purpose of the presentation to provide members of parliament with the necessary information, guidance on the audit outcomes for the portfolio to enable the portfolio committee members to effectively execute their oversight function. Basically, the mission of AGSA and the purpose of this presentation are linked when it comes to the execution of oversight function. On the next slide, which is slide number 4, with the heading 3-year comparative audit outcomes. What I'll do, I'll start by, on the far right, I'll start by explaining those colors that on the graph. The green square, which is unqualified audit opinion with no findings. So this one is basically referred to the term we normally use, which is a clean audit, basically meaning that when the entity has obtained unqualified, there are no issues of non-compliances, and there are no issues with auditing of predetermined objectives. And then the yellow square, unqualified with findings. So basically, we're saying there are no material misstatements, but the entities has issues of the entity had no material misstatements, but there were issues of non-compliances and issues of predetermined objectives which were reported. The third one, the purple one, is qualified with findings. So basically in this area, there were material misstatements, but those misstatements were in few areas of the financial statements. The red one, adverse or disclaimer, is basically where there were disagreements with management or where there was a limitation of scope where the auditors could not be provided with relevant information to enable them to make a conclusion. And the last one, the blue one, is audit outstanding. Basically, in the current year, we don't have, I'm pleased to report that we don't have any qualified audits. We don't have adverse or disclaimer, and there's no outstanding audits, which means all the six entities within the portfolio were able to submit their financial statements by the due date. Getting to the main graph, I'll start from the right hand with the financial year 2011-2012. When we look at the picture, the green ones, which is unqualified, the clean audits, we had 50% of the entities, and then there was 50% of entities with unqualified with findings. On the next one, during the 2012-2013, that's where we've seen DMR has regressed with qualification, and then we had two unqualified and three unqualified without findings. On the last one for 2013-2014, Yeah, we see a bit of a regression again, because when you look at this one, there's no more green color. All the entities obtained unqualified with findings. We would like to see a picture where the entities are moving towards a green color, which is a clean audit opinion. So basically, for the current year, all the entities had unqualified with findings. The main areas were compliance with law, non-compliance with law and regulations, and the predetermined objectives. If we look at the next slide, which is slide number 5, we're basically summarizing the movements for comparing the two financial years. We again listing those types of opinions, and then we'll notice that from the bottom, there were no outstanding. Like I've indicated, there were no adverse, there were no qualifications, and then the 6 entities obtained unqualified with findings, and then there were no clean audits, which is unqualified with no findings. And then you will notice that DMR has improved. It moved from qualified with findings to unqualified with findings. And then CGS and mine health safety, they remained unchanged with unqualified audit opinion with findings. Then we have a regression. The 3 entities moved from unqualified with no findings to unqualified with findings. And those entities are MinTech, State Diamond Trader, and SADPMR. So overall, if you look at the picture, it's with the 3 regression, it's basically a regression when you compare the 2 financial years. On the next slide, it basically shows that for financial statements, the overall outcome, we have 6 entities that obtain unqualified opinions. But in this slide, we didn't differentiate between the clean audit and unqualified without findings. And then also, it's good to note that all 6 entities, there were no issues on performance report that were reported in the audit report. But of concern is the compliance with laws and regulations. So you'll notice that on the last cycle, 6 entities, all of them had issues with compliance with legislation. I'll give details of that in the next slide. On the next slide, titled risk areas, basically what we're saying is if the entities can address those risk areas that are listed there, then it will give them an opportunity to obtain a clean audit opinion. The first one is the quality of submitted financial statement. That first circle, it basically says 5 entities, excluding State Diamond Trader. The other entities, when they submitted the financial statements by the 1st of May, those financial statements had errors on them. So they relied on the audit processes to identify the errors, and then they corrected those errors. If they were not given an opportunity to correct the errors, we might have been looking at a different situation where we might have had qualified opinions. So I think basically this is the area where we need to really focus on to advise the departments and the entities to say they mustn't just submit the financial statements for compliance. They need to make sure that when they submit those financial statements, they are accurate and they are complete. So as the State Diamond Trader can be commended for submitting the financials that were free from material misstatements on the 31st of May. The next risk area, quality of submitted performance report. Basically what we're saying on that area, we're saying 4 entities submitted the performance report which were complete and accurate, which did not have errors. The 2 entities that submitted performance reports with errors, it was Mineral Resources and the Council for Geoscience. So also they were also given an opportunity to correct those errors and resubmit the performance report. The next area is supply chain management. this area is the area that we also need to focus on, because we see MINTEC, Mine Health Safety and Council for Geoscience, which had issues on supply chain management. And those issues are given in detail in the other document which we have distributed that says briefing note. So in that document you'll see the areas that were reported that which were part of issues relating to supply chain management. State Diamond Trader also had issues, but it was the first time that they really had serious issues on supply chain management. And basically it related to instances where contracts were extended without following the proper processes. The next three areas, which is financial health, human resource management, and information technology. These three areas, basically, they even though they are issues, the issues are not material. They're not affecting the audit opinion. But we did highlight it to the entity to say they need to look at these issues and make sure that they address them, especially the issues of human resources. If you find a situation where there are vacant positions for a long time, so that will also affect the operation of the entities, and they might not be able to achieve some of the objectives due to those vacant positions. So the issues have been highlighted in the management report so that the entities are able to address them going forward. On the next slide, we basically summarize the most common root causes that resulted in the entities having non-compliance issues. The first one is the slow response by management, mainly the accounting officer and senior managers, to address the issues that have been identified either by the internal audit, by the audit committee, or by the auditor general. The next one is key officials lack appropriate competencies. This also results in issues of the issues I've highlighted earlier to say the financial statements were not accurate. They did not comply with the financial reporting framework. So if the officials do not have appropriate competencies, so that may result in those non-compliances and financials which are not complete and accurate. We also highlighted the issue of instability or vacancies in key positions, which has also contributed to the issues that were reported. Additional issues is mainly the inadequate monitoring of compliance with financial reporting framework. On this area, we're saying after preparing the financial statements, there should be a senior official who will review those financial statements and make sure that they comply with the relevant financial reporting framework. And also, additional root cause will be inadequate monitoring of compliance with the laws and regulations. And the key to note on this area is also the timing of monitoring of those compliances. If, for example, if we look at supply chain management processes, which requires the request of quotations, purchase order, and the payment, if the monitoring is also it's only done at the payment stage, then it becomes difficult to prevent all those compliances, because after the request and the person who's approving the purchase order, that person needs to make sure that all the other processes of the bidding process of obtaining quotation have been satisfied before the order can be approved. So I think if there can be an improvement in that area, making sure that the monitoring is done at the right stages, then we might see a situation where there is an improvement when it comes to supply chain management findings. On the next slide, slide number 9, we also talk about the key controls that should be implemented in order to ensure that the entities and the department are achieving the good results. The first one is mainly the effective leadership. If you look at those parts, we have the we've categorized them into financial statements, performance reports, and compliance with the legislation. The numbers that are included there is basically the number of entities, because we have six entities in the portfolio. If there are issues, we'll indicate the number of entities that are affected by those issues. So when we look at effective leadership, mainly what we're saying, they say we didn't really identify significant issues in that area. When we look at human resource controls, there were various issues, although they were not that material, but we have highlighted to the entities to say they need to look at those issues, especially the vacancies and the acting in positions. When we look at ICT governance and controls, also in that area, we're saying there are issues that entities need to look at and resolve. The next one is audit action plans. On that area, we didn't really identify significant issues. The evidence is that the entities and the department are really doing their best to implement the action plans that they've developed. The next one, which is the proper record keeping, there were some issues there. Basically, what we're saying is when we requested information, it was not readily available for some entities. And this has an impact on the budget, on the budgeted audit fee, and the timing for completing our audit. So we encourage the entities to make sure that they have a proper filing system, and the information should be readily available when it is requested by the auditors. The next one is the daily and monthly controls. There were some weaknesses in that area. Basically, here we're looking at the monthly reconciliations of creditors, of cash and bank, of receivables. So there were some weaknesses that were identified in that area. The main one is the review and monitor of compliance. This one is of concern, because this is the area that led to all the departments not achieving the clean audit opinion. So if they can look into that, the first one being submitting the financials that were not complete and accurate, that will lead to a non-compliance. And the second one was the issue of supply chain processes, where there were processes that were not followed. So if the entities can look at that area, I hope they, in the coming years, we might see a picture where most of them attain opinion. On the next slide, we basically show the assurance level. It basically says all those people indicated there, each and everyone has a role to play in order to assist the entities and the department to obtain a clean audit opinion. So the first level is, but there is a slide that gives more details, which I'll touch with the next slide to give context to this assurance level. But the first level is basically senior management and accounting officer or accounting authority. With senior management, we still have some concerns to say they can do more in order to assist the entities to attain or to obtain the clean audit opinion. And then with accounting officer authority, we have indicated that four of them had provided some assurance, so we were satisfied, but there's still two that can do better. With executive authority, we were satisfied with the assurance level provided. Internal audit and audit committee, we were also satisfied. But you will notice that with the portfolio committee, we have indicated they provided some assurance. Basically, what we have noticed there is that the oversight was done, but the problem was the timing of the oversight, because also we need to make sure that it's done timeously to assist the department to be able to take corrective actions. On the next slide, slide 11, basically during the year, like we do with the portfolio committees, we do have stakeholder interactions where we interact with the accounting officers and then with the ministers. And during our interaction, we do request them to give us their commitments, which will assist the entities to obtain a clean audit opinion. So the commitments which are listed there, it's basically the commitments for the previous year. This year we didn't really get new commitments. But basically the minister has committed that the filling of key vacancies, committed to the filling of key vacancies to facilitate effective monthly reporting. This will also assist in making sure that when they submit those financials, they are correct and accurate. And the next one, improve the quality of information and daily disciplines of junior staff. This one is also linked to the key controls that I have highlighted, for example, of monthly reconciliations, which will also assist in making sure that the financial statements submitted comply with the financial reporting framework. The next one is the governance structure, internal audit to review financial information produced. Also this one, by internal audits reviewing those financials before they are submitted to the AG, so they will be able to identify the errors, they will be able to assist the departments in complying with the financial reporting framework. And the next one is to re-look at the structures of support provided to the Director General. So basically, these commitments will track them throughout the year when we have our interactions with the minister, just for them to give us feedback in terms of where they are in addressing these issues. The next slide is basically a summary of the oversight model. Parliament, provincial legislature, and municipality, of which in that oversight model, it includes also the oversight by the portfolio committee. But I'm not going to go into detail on this slide. It's basically what the Parliament is doing, including the portfolio committee. The next slide as well is oversight component. This one mainly deals with the portfolio committee. I'll just highlight number five, which indicates that to conduct oversight over the executive authority and consult lies with any other executive organ of state and make recommendation of which is what is being done over this week by the committee. On the next slide, slide 14, maybe we can look at this one in a bit more detail. Consideration for portfolio committee when dealing with performance monitoring. And basically, this one is also linked to the one for assurance level that I've discussed, to say when we look at the assurance level provided by this committee, our starting point will be this information in this slide. It's basically is the portfolio committee should look at whether the strategic plans and annual performance plans for entities are aligned to the national development plan. Also, does the entity have adequate resources, human and financial, available to achieve predetermined objectives? Are the targets realistic? This one will require an understanding of the entity's mandate in order to be able to identify whether those targets will assist the entity in realizing their mandate. How are the entities ensuring that strategic plans and annual performance plans will be achieved? Also look at the portfolio committee should review the quarterly progress of entities with regard to predetermined objectives and the contributions to the national development plan. The portfolio committee should review annual achievement of predetermined objectives by the entities. This information is in the annual report. The portfolio committee should approve and track changes to strategic plans and annual performance reports. On slide 15 is support, oversight, and complementary mandate. This slide is basically giving more detail in terms of the assurance level. So the first part is management assurance, which is the first level of assurance, and that one covers senior management. It covers accounting officers or accounting authority and executive authority. And the assurance level required is extensive for both of them. And then with senior management, they must take immediate action to address specific recommendations and adhere to financial management and internal control system. So basically, when we evaluate the assurance level, that's what we'll be looking at to say that they really take immediate action. The accounting officer, they should hold officials accountable on implementation of internal control and report progress quarterly and annually. The executive authority should monitor the progress of performance and enforce accountability and consequences. Also, we have the oversight assurance role and the role of independent assurance, of which I will not bore you and read those information. You can go through the information. On the next slide, it basically refers to how does the clean administration improve service delivery, creating a better and dignified life for the citizens of South Africa through timely, effective, efficient, and economical service delivery. So basically, it's to indicate the components that are required in order for us to make sure that in addition to having financial statements that are free of misstatements, we also have an improvement when it comes to service delivery. So that requires a robust financial performance management system, independent and relevant reporting by the AGSA, oversight and accountability of all, which include this committee, and commitment and ethical behavior. So the combination of all those will assist the entities in improving on service delivery and also improving on the quality of financial statements and performance reports. The next one deals with accountability and remedies to address transgressions and poor performances. You'll notice in that slide that there's a reference to in brief, the Auditor General booklet that I hope it was distributed previously, but we do have extra copies if members do require additional copies. So that will give us additional information on how to deal with transgressions and poor performance. On the next slide, on slide number 18, accountability and remedies to address transactions and poor performance. This AGSA booklet highlights the legislation that enables remedies to be applied where national and provincial departments are guilty of transgressions and poor performances. It addresses the following typical matters reported in the general report: failure to comply with legislated obligations and responsibilities, unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, possible fraud and corruption, poor work performance by officials and suppliers, and other non-compliances with the legislation.
Okay, basically, that's all that we had for today, Chairperson. We will take questions. Okay, thanks very much with that presentation. And surely, honorable members, there is a presentation. Except to say two things before I go to the first one, that information has never been enough. In fact, they say the absence of information can be too costly. So I'm not asking whether they need them. We will distribute, because there are only five, those copies. If they do have them, they still add to information. They will have to pass the information to the next one if they do have the second one. But I can confirm, yes, the booklet was distributed.
Okay.
But it's highly possible that they may not be having them now. So the gesture is welcomed and accepted. Two is that we seem to are going to be friends, because there seems to be a lot that has to be done. But I'm not leading anyone. I would say I will qualify mine. It won't be an unqualified, it will be a qualified committee opinion later. But with the report that you have submitted, it seems we are going to be friends for quite a long time. We must not lose each other. But let me first allow questions of clarity or comments. I know you are going to do as usual. Honorable Lorima, Honorable Schmidt. I know Honorable beginning in some way. Going to come back, so I must open that space. I know those words.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. A very comprehensive report, so thank you for that. I want to jump past that and go to the actual annual report, in this case the DMR, where we look at the comments of the AG in sections, well, really 21 to 24. And I'll just extract from that. For example, section 21, you say, and you know, this came up in your presentation as well, that the financial statements submitted for auditing were not prepared in accordance with the prescribed financial reporting framework. I'm trying to understand why you think that happened. I'd ask you to speculate as to why, what you think caused that. Was there change in personnel? Did they lose people? How come they go from a although the performance improved this year from last year's, it still doesn't seem. It seems that we are going backwards in important respects. You talk about significant internal control deficiencies. We seem to have been banging on this particular point for some time, and it doesn't seem to be getting fixed. So I'd like you to also perhaps point us to what you think should be done with more vigour, perhaps, than has been in the past.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a very interesting presentation, because I haven't seen it before. It's the first time it's all these circles and colours and makes it understandable to people who are not financial gurus. But I'm concerned about two things. One is the one issue raised by Ms. Lorimer about the quality of the financial statements, but it's the leadership issue that worries me, because somewhere in these schematic diagrams you have five entities, I think it was a pink or a red leadership indication. For instance, on page 8 of page 8, most common root causes, and that's what worries me. Key officials lack appropriate competencies. The root cause at 3 audit chiefs. That's a concern. Because it was never, I think it's the first time these kind of issues are creeping in, it's my impression. Page 9, compliance with legislation. My question basically is, if you look at that last diagram, proper record keeping, 3 entities, daily and monthly controls, 2, review and monitor compliance, 6. My question is, the department is, its core function is the monitoring of mining companies to their stated SLPs and all their requirements as indicated in the license. Where and how do we establish via your statements how correctly and efficiently they have done it? In other words, how could you guide us to see whether they have complied with the core mandate? Is it under page 9, the last diagram? Do we see it there? Or is there anything else where you would, in terms of your, in other words, direct us to the specific pages in your annual report where we could establish some form of measure? Because there's a lot of emphasis on financial statements, performance reports, and compliance with legislation. My real concern is the fingers are going to start pointing at each other very soon, and that's after the auditors, Moloto and company, have complied, have engaged or assessed mining companies' compliance to their undertakings in terms of the mining charge or their failure thereof. In other words, can we say, department, you have complied with your undertaking to keep mining companies accountable? Or can we say, department, you have not done enough to ensure that mining companies who are not in abeyance have been sent letters, have been requested to comply? Those are the kind of issues I think this committee needs to try and deal with, because that's the core mandate of this department. All this is very important, but that's the core mandate. How do we get to that gist? Thank you.
That's why I pointed to Honorable Pigmini before you could raise your eyes, as I knew you were going to.
Thank you very much. You see, Chair, when we speak here about internal auditors, and it sounds at least they have a clean health in terms of the report, the internal of the department. They are talking very very nice about them. But again, in the same score, there are issues around issues of financial controls that are problematic by the same department. Now, to me, it's contradicting now, because when you request that information from them, it was supposed to be there because they are working with the department all the time. I'm not talking about you, auditors. I'm saying you come later. Now, I don't understand now when they're going to be even green. Unless you want to say that they suggested, they proposed the same recommendation, but they were not implemented by the department. It might be that. So, really, it is that from us. We want really to say, because daily and monthly controls, if they were doing this way again, not at the stage where they are, when you find error, then go back to them. So really, I want to say that there are those contradictions that I observe. I think what we need, you know, as a portfolio committee, so that we're able to follow it up and make sure we have a clean audit in the 2014-2015. We need to get that assurance that if we need, we have auditors that are popular, want to be popular, or not raising these issues in the way that you are raising them. Thank you very much.
Okay, I'm sure you can give answers. I thought I was going to come later to that specific question myself. I think you have to explain. I looked at the report. You have to explain. And I agree also with Honorable Schmidt. It's much more of it's not a difficult or complex, work-friendly presentation in terms of sometimes when people deal with finances, they become so complicated. But I think we have to get this clarity around the issue, because I'm not going, that's why I said I might come back later. There has to be a sense in the committee, because generally, even when I looked at what you put here, there has to be clarity on the, to what extent can a portfolio committee intervene without interfering, because there's always that turf battle. Now, if you've got what is called internal audit, and in terms of your report here, talks about interventions that are coming at a later stage, when processes, there is no continuous, if one were to summarize, there is no continuous monitoring of what is happening until the last moment. And that to me becomes, because the internal audit becomes an internal arrangement of some level of internal oversight. Now, if in terms of assurances that gets a thumbs up, it leaves an impression that no, man, then it means these things were detected within the good performance of an internal arrangement in terms of the expenditure pattern of either the entities or the department. But on the other side, the report then does raise its concern. I would say in simple terms, it seems the report does raise concern about internal audit mechanisms. But on the other side, it talks about the assurances that it gives. Secondly, I think there will have to be clarity, because if you look on page 10 again, which is the same issue of the internal audit, if one were to look at your first level, one would generally draw an assumption to say, no man, things are good, because your accounting officers constitute almost 80% in terms of performance, rather than you left with about 10%. It's four is to two. Now, if really so, it looks good, surely somewhere though, then you must detect where is the problem. Because it means they are giving assurance. Well, except if we give different interpretation of what assurance means. For me, assurance in general terms is a fact that you can see that when there are interventions and there's an improvement. So I think we will have to, I'm saying it, I am not going to sit here and protect the portfolio committee. At least Honorable Smith and Lauren were here. They can. But I think the problem is that the portfolio committee sometimes can go to a certain extent. And in most cases, the primary task becomes that of an oversight. Now, an oversight is more, it's a post-action exercise. Now, I have a picture that if you were to say every quarter, come here, can we see what are you doing? You end up having a turf war of running the department. But monitoring whether the department complies with what the portfolio committee expected, something else. But I don't think we'll sit here and speak for the portfolio, but I'm looking at the distance of the two. One would argue strongly and say, in the instance where you've got good internal controls, which becomes the primary task of an internal audit arrangement, surely probably we'll be sitting here now talking about what I see, and I must be honest, I don't think we should hide it. It's not promising. I don't want us to sit here when there is regression. In general, what you are giving us here as a report is that we are going down. We shouldn't hide it. And that's not what we are here for. But they are still going to present. At least you helped us. Now we know where to start. So no matter how good is the paper, sometimes the only difficulty with the paper is that it doesn't refuse anything that is written on it. But we will see those things. We are not here to contest with you. But I think it's important that you clarify some of those things so that when we deal with the actual reports, we can have an understanding whether, like you said at some point, that there are situations where there are contestations or differences of opinions between the auditors and management itself, so that we can also draw that whether is it really based on that we've got a problem here today. So I'm just saying that issue of internal controls for me, in a nutshell, if one were to summarize it, is what we have. Now, if we give those people, I'm not saying we shouldn't, they can tell us now that, no, we're doing our work, and even the Auditor General says we're giving assurance. We're the ones that we can be relied upon, that we're doing our work in perfection. Is that what it means in the final analysis?
Okay.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. I said before I start with the first question, maybe I want to start at the statement that you were making around the regression of the portfolio. Overall there has been a slight regression where some of the entities have moved from a clean audit to an audit where there were findings that were actually corrected prior to the final issuance of the report. But I just to give you some comfort, it's not that gloomy as you may put it to be. Because you see, there's a few entities, right? The one major part was that the department moved from a qualified opinion to an unqualified opinion, which was excellent. So it sets the standard for the rest of the portfolio, and I like that they can take everybody through with them to move towards a clean audit. And like you mentioned earlier in some of the sessions that we've had, the portfolio is almost there to get a cleaner audit opinion throughout the entity. Like you'll notice, there were some issues, for instance, where there were findings, but in all the entities, there were probably one or maybe maximum two items which needed to be corrected before the reports were issued. For instance, like if you look at the Department of Mineral Resources, where this will answer Lorimo's question as well, where the financial statements were not prepared in accordance with the required frameworks. There we are saying it's a non-compliant paragraph. What happens is they need to submit financials on the 31st of May. In that process, we have 2 months to look at financial statements to see if the required framework, which would be the modified cash standards for the department, has been complied to or not. And in that time, over the past year, there has been issues with regard to receivables for the department, with regard to the royalties and the prospecting fees. And that's where the qualification lied before. And this year it was clear. What happened is, obviously, the department submitted the financial statements, and on 31st of May, there were issues, in essence, where before the financials or before the audit report was submitted, we had to make adjustments. So, in essence, that's where the non-compliance really comes from, in terms of we're not prepared in terms of the framework. However, after the audit process, that non-compliance was taken away. However, that's why we need to highlight that in our report, to indicate that process was done during the audit process, yes, through discussions and with engagement with the department, that has been cleared, and now the report is reflecting an unqualified opinion. So it was just in that period after the referral to mayor submission when there was non-compliance, but through engagement and through various adjustments and processes that we've gone through, those non-compliance has been removed from the financial. So it's not really reflected there. It just had to be corrected during the audit process. Chairperson, just to give you some comfort also, if you look at the various entities, this will also touch on to the other question about the reviewing of the compliance with laws and regulations. See, we look at financial statements in terms of the frameworks, we look at the annual performance information or pre-determined objectives, and we look at compliance with various laws and regulations. Now you'll see the slide which you indicated was concerning where there was compliance with legislation. Most of these areas where there was non-compliance with the legislation came in that area where there were errors in one or two account balances or class transactions in the financial statement, where there were material errors. But in the audit process, these were corrected, and at the end of the process when the audit report was issued, the amounts reflected correctly. So there was just in essence on 31st of May when they submitted, there were errors, and as the requirement is that on the 31st of May that the entities department submit financial statements that are free of material mistakes. That's in terms of the Section 21 requirement, that they need to be free of material mistakes. But in that time, we identified errors, and they were corrected subsequently before the audit report is issued. So the financials that are in the annual report of the various entities and departments is reflecting correctly what should be reflected. So I know it appears as all six entities there's issues with compliance, but it's not really that major of an issue like your concerns. As the Department of Mineral Resources, they need to look over compliance, and they're not doing that. It's not their issue. It's the financials where they have the error on 31st May. We go through the process of audit. We find these errors, and they can be corrected.
Errors in the reporting, errors in the financials?
Errors in the financials. So, it's a compliance requirement for these entities and for this department to actually submit this financial statements that are free from material statement. And because we find material errors, but obviously we can quantify it and we can correct it, so they correct it before the process. So it's not not indicating that these entities and departments are not overseeing compliance as a whole. If you look at like entities like SADPMR, STC, like for instance SADPMR, it was issues around assets which had to be fixed. CGS, mining and safety, there were errors that were probably one component on entire financial statements that needed to be fixed, and they were fixed before the process. So that's where your non-compliant actions came through, where either your class of transactions, your disclosure notes, or your account balances had issues. They were corrected during the audit process, and as a result, they received unqualified opinions. So the compliance, in essence, is the errors that were identified in the audit process and were corrected. In previous engagements that we've had, we've indicated that the portfolio is actually one of the better portfolios. See around, although now you'll see this on the slide, you see it's a regression, so it seems bad, but in essence it's not really bad. With a little bit of tweaking, I don't see how in the next financial year this can all be clean, because in essence your financial statements are all unqualified. In that period that we had to audit, there were some issues which we identified. Clearance management, like previously in the department where they had unqualified, the issues were identified. I mean, you guys may have known in the previous years there were issues around the receivables, but obviously we could not quantify it, we could not fix. But you'll see in terms of one of the commitments that were given, where filling of key vacancies to facilitate effective monthly reporting. In past financial year, I'd like to commend the CFO. She has put in a lot from the department side to get to where they were. Although there was assistance required from other stakeholders, from other parties, but they got there. Now it's all about taking it forward to the next level, taking it forward and sustaining it. We want to sustain the opinion, because there was an instance at one point where it dropped, but now it's all about sustaining. So the outlook is not that bad. Just to give the chairperson some comfort, because your closing statement seemed to be that you guys are worried. I'd like to give you some comfort that although there's a bit of the red and the yellow, but to get over the yellow is not a long path. You're at the top of the mountain. You just need to get to the, you're not at the bottom. So in terms of that, I just want to see if there's anything else I can cover before my colleague takes over. I don't know if I answered in terms of the quality of the financial statements. Again, because there was one or two material errors, quality wasn't perfect. And through the audit process, it was corrected and could be corrected. That was the good part about it. A lot of the times, financials are so out of sorts that it can't be corrected because we don't know the magnitude. There's information that's not there, but it's been there. The department has also committed in the sense where they are going to beef up their section around the receivables, get assistance from the various stakeholders that were involved in getting them to this unqualified opinion. So there is commitment, there is movement already from discussions we've had with some of the people. The teams have already gone to the provinces, they are moving. So there is work taking place to keep them to sustain this and to get from the yellow to the green. And then I think overall in terms of that, I'll hand over to my colleague to give any other further comments, but like we mentioned in previous engagements, you're one of the better portfolios, and especially since you got over the hurdle of the qualified opinion from the department side, you're almost at the top. Thank you.
Thank you. Just to add to what Yasin has indicated, before I can answer the questions, I think the two key areas is the issue of submitting the financials and making sure that before they submit the financials, they've been reviewed and they are complete and accurate. Because if those are submitted with errors, with material misstatements, they'll always have this non-compliance. This non-compliance won't go away and we won't move to a clean audit opinion. And the next issue is the CM, compliance with supply chain processes. Like I've indicated with the example that I gave, to say the timing of monitoring is very important. If you want to monitor at the payment stage, the services have already been provided. Irrespective of whether you obtained direct quotations, whether you followed the proper procurement procedures, if the service provider has provided a service, and it's being picked up late that we didn't follow, we still need to pay the service provider, and there will be an irregular expenditure coming out of that transaction. I think those are the two main issues within the portfolio. If they can make sure that they attend to those, it's positive, like Yasin has indicated, to move to the clean audit opinion. I would like to talk about the issue of the monitoring of the departments on the mining. We do have procedures that we compile to test that area of compliance, and it's just that I don't have the previous year report, but in the previous year report, you remember, we did have about two or three paragraphs where we were talking about their role of monitoring the mining sector. So that is the area that we always make sure that every year we cover it, though we don't like test 100%, but we do have a procedure to test that that compliance with the relevant laws and regulations. On the internal auditors part, I do take note of the comments made And basically what we do with the internal audit, we start by checking their independence, their competency, and their scope. So we basically check their plan to say, okay, for this year, this is the plan that they've compiled for internal audit section. We check the scope, and we check their risk assessment to say, did they perform a proper risk assessment, which will inform their audit plan for that financial year. So basically for the entities, we've done that part, and we have noticed that they did have a proper plan in place, and we've evaluated the scope that they came up with. And also it's important to note that whatever that their objective differs from our objective. So they mainly focus on the controls, and we mainly focus on the financial. So you may find that their procedures will not be able to detect everything that will be detected by us as external auditors. So we were satisfied with their risk assessment. We were satisfied with their plan, their reports, and the recommendations that they've made to these various entities. But I do take note of the point that if we say we give them a green light, and there are still issues with controls, maybe there is a bit of a gap there, and we can look at that gap to say, okay, how can we close that gap to say, even when they have their plans, are they also looking at the internal controls within the entities? And one of the commitments by the minister is to say they're going forward, they want to request the internal auditors to review those financials before they are submitted to us. So that can also assist in making sure that if there are non-compliances with the financial reporting framework, the internal auditors can be able to pick that non-compliances. But the reason why you may find that we pick up something, they don't pick it up, is in terms of the different audit objectives that we have. But we will look at the issue of the control weaknesses that we have identified, how we can close that gap. Thank you.
Okay. Just to give you this answer, when the arrow goes down, I just want to simplify so that we don't complicate it simple. When the arrow goes down, until we see it turning goes up, we will then not be worried. As long as the arrow goes down,
mm-hmm.
it tells us that it is not pointing at green, it's pointing to purple.
Yeah.
So it can't move from yellow to green when it's going down.
Yeah.
The next stage will be purple. So we can't only be worried when it's in purple. We should be worried when it's still on yellow.
Yeah.
And in your report, at some point you had 50-50 when it comes to yellow and green. And just recently, some of us may not have been here, you might have given the same promise that no, we're going to be turning the corner. But you had 50 green and 33% yellow. And for the first time, they had purple. You see, from 50-50 green and yellow to now 50-33-17. And now we are in 100%. Surely the trend is not improving. You see? Because 50 is always there, has always been there. Now the reality, the green 50 has disappeared completely. The yellow has been there. Instead of the yellow did not improve from yellow, and the 17% went to join 50, which would have given you 67%. So surely we've got a reason to be worried as a committee. I don't think it's something that must comfort us. And we must be honest, we agree, we accept what you say. We've got no reason. But that's what you are saying, that's not what you are seeing. So what we have out there is a slippery road. The explanation that comes, it's not what we have now. I'm not blaming you, but what I'm trying to say is that it becomes more, if we're to play that argument, we become more of being defensive and being like in denial that there is this issue. But and the fact is, we will only see that improvement when we deal with 2014, 2015. For now, we are dealing with 2013-2014. And we must accept it's not good. We will not deny the fact that there is commitment and undertaking and a projection, if we were to use your approach, that 2014 and 2015, rest assured. But I hope 2015 will not also give us reasons why we wouldn't be. The reality is that it's not a question. Yes, we agree on the financials, it's good. And I think we must appreciate that interventions that were made in terms of corrections, whether post audit or whatever, but there are actions that have been taken. And I'm sure the department and the entities will speak on that. But the bottom line is that what is written must be what confirms what we want. That's the point. And I think on the issue of the I understand and I appreciate sometimes audit approaches sometimes may not be the case, the same between yourselves as well as the internal audit. But at least common practice should prevail. I think that's why also Honorable Beginning was raising that issue that on internal audit. But in a nutshell, we note, for me, I think what we could say is that I think even between this committee, and I did give that assurance, that quarterly was not just supposed to be between the committee and the department. We also agreed that we would want to work with the AG very closely so that we can also be able to detect some of the problems even before they could happen. And I said part of the issues that we should acknowledge is that once it is prescribed or once it is projected here, sometimes we have to walk the thin line of not interfering with the work that is operational as a committee. Because then when you do an oversight of what you were doing, you can't do an oversight on what yourselves must account on whether. Can you imagine if we're doing this thing and then we're supposed to do an oversight and we come here and we say, then we all have to take a responsibility that we failed. In fact, oversight will have to be done even to those who are supposed to do the oversight. Now, the point I'm trying to say is that I'm sure you will appreciate that area, that the committee, what it must do, it's oversight responsibility and ensure that there's accountability, particularly in the executive within the main line. It also has to also be careful because even between the executive and the administration, there has to be a way of balancing so that the executive does not usurp powers of being an administrative administrative body. Now, for the portfolio committee, it becomes more difficult. Because it may end up having a battle between the executive as well as the administration. So that's that tight line. And unfortunately, proactive measures are quite complex for a portfolio committee. It can only intervene in terms of saying this is what is expected. But the actual compliance is then a post-mortem exercise because you then look at whether people have complied or not with what you were doing and continue to make. Unfortunately, that level of accountability, and I think it's an issue that within the legislative process, it has to be to find more way of intensifying it. And I'm sure you will help us also very much to say how do we shape at a legislative level so that we can have effective. Because when you say oversight, sometimes the interpretation is that oversight is more like monitoring. And monitoring at times doesn't mean that you can tell people, do this now and do this that one. Otherwise, then you are interfering with what they are doing. So I'm saying we will have to strike that balance. But we can't sit here as a committee and defend. I think it will be, it's not an act of being unprofessional. It becomes an act of cowardice. What we can assure you as this committee, that what you want to run away from with due respect is that we're sitting here, we want a clean audit. A clean audit. I would appreciate if for me I sit here next time, and I hope if the committee says that, the entities, I would appreciate when we sit here and talk about an expenditure, for an example, that has gone to a good cause. Then that becomes an issue. But if it's something that we have to explain in other words, that has got no material bearing or effective changing the lives of our people, then surely we can't be excited about it. So we'll only be excited and appreciative when we have done the right thing. So far, I think all of us will agree we'll have to pull up our socks. None of us must rest. And that's the assurance you must give us, and that's the assurance we must give you. So from time to time, we'll come and knock at your door when we need help. Don't close that door. So it doesn't mean when you come here, we're seeing you faced for the last time. We will only meet when it is fashionable to do so, or when it is legal to do so. We don't want to work with you according to what Parliament says. We want to work with you according to what it is determined by this committee, what has to be done. So I think thank you very much on that. You are done. And you are released. Thank you. Honorable members, we are left with someone who has got more knowledge than us, because I'm told the researcher connects everything and says what is right for our benefit. Can we now give an opportunity? Those who want to go for tea, with due respect, or stand, you can stand up, stretch your leg, and we started very late. So we will then allow the researcher, Dr. Nicole, to do his presentation, and then we will take it from there. Dr. Nicole. You must use this thing. Yeah, it's working.
Thank you, Chair. I think everyone has got copies of the presentation that was distributed earlier. The analysis which I'm giving is about the annual report. In fact, it's comparing, as I think it's stated there on the third slide, it's comparing the annual performance plan of the department, which was presented to the committee last year, with the annual report. It being the requirement of the Treasury, of the National Treasury, that annual reports must deal with every aspect of performance to which an entity has committed itself in its strategic plan. So I have been careful in comparing what was in the annual performance plan with what is in the annual report, not looking particularly at the financial issues, but at the performance issues. On the fourth slide there, dealing with the estimates of national expenditure, selected performance measures for the DMR, that comes out of the budget, which was presented at the beginning of 2013. And I'm just going to go through these nine issues. There are 166 issues, or 166 performance measures, which are used by the department. I'm just going to look at these nine ones. The first set responds to outcome four of the presidency, the goal of decent employment through inclusive economic growth, which obviously has links to the National Development Plan. And the indicators here are, first of all,
the number of occupational health and safety inspections and mine audits conducted. So the target here was 8,300, but the actual number conducted was 9,400. In other words, a considerable overachievement on this target. With regard to the number of mining rights granted to historically disadvantaged South Africans, this is an indicator of transformation in the industry, trying to open up access to previously disadvantaged South Africans. The target was not met here, but it was 96% achieved, which, as some people say, is in the target range. Also, the department doesn't have a control over the economy. It doesn't have a control over the number of requests or for applications that are made. And in some senses, it's not a good indicator of departmental performance, because it depends on what other people in the economy are doing, that they come forward and they want mining rights. But it is within the target range. The number of industry workshops on compliance issues, these are urgent across the department, across the country. 9 workshops were planned and 9 workshops were held. On the number of mining charter inspections, there's been a change in the format of the measure here. It's now called the number of social and labor plan inspections, which obviously speak to the mining charters, as the SLP commitments also link with the mining charter commitments. And here, the target was 210, and it was overachieved. 285 mining charter inspections occurred. That doesn't tell us what the levels of compliance were that were found in those inspections, which, you know, may be a problem. We don't know whether most of those mining charter inspections reveal that mines were complying with the law, or whether that was not the case. But the measure is that the department conducted the inspections. Publications also overachieved, policies developed as planned, and the number of sustainable SMMEs supported, new and established, that speaks to a program with the Industrial Development Corporation, and there's an overachievement as well. On the next slide, looking at the last two measures, this is focusing on environmental issues. Environmental assets and natural resources, are they valued, protected, and continually enhanced? And the two indicators here are the number of environment inspections, and this was overachieved by 10%, with 1,868 inspections being undertaken. There are other places in the annual report where they reflect on the new requirements that the department is going to have under the one environmental system, and they reflect on the training of additional inspectors on environmental issues that will come into effect in the next year. The target on the number of derelict and owner's mines rehabilitated was not met. 28 sites were rehabilitated instead of 30, but the report indicates that those two extra sites are in the process of being completed. They just were not completed within the financial year. The target for next year is 50, and the target for the previous year, I think, was 15 or something. So there's an improvement in the number of mine sites which the department is aiming to deal with every year. While it is a small number in comparison with the huge number of problematic mine sites, there is an improvement in this area. You'll notice that in the report there are no direct performance measures relating to the control of acid mine drainage or to the control of illegal mining. And the DMR has important responsibilities in both of these areas. They are discussed in the narrative of the DMR report and also in that of the Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate, where they speak about a remarkable improvement with respect to combating illegal mining. The next summary slide, looking at composite performance, I counted 166 predetermined performance targets for the year. Usually I can refer to the Auditor General's report for what the exact number is, but this year the AG didn't count all of the predetermined performance targets, they just did a sample. I found that 77% of the performance targets were met. 23% were not met or partially achieved. And in 2012-13 there was a similar result with 79% of targets achieved, that is 126 out of 160. In previous reports, the Attorney General has indicated, the Auditor General has indicated that the number of report, that the target for that the minimum target for the performance on these issues is 20%. If a department gets less than 20% on its performance, there's an indication that the strategic planning process has not been undertaken completely correctly. That 20% framework threshold has not been used every year, but that is the sort of measure which I used. Did they achieve more than 20% or less than 20% of the targets which they set for themselves and which they came to Parliament last year and presented and said, we're going to meet these targets? So the DMR did not meet that threshold this year or last year, but it's very close to the target range. The evaluation of the performance of a department is extremely difficult. It's a balancing act because not all of the measures which are selected are of an equal weight. For example, the department is able to report 100% achievement of on a measure of whether all mining licenses and closure certificates that are issued comply with the laws and regulations. Now, it's great that every time there's a closure certificate issued or there's a mine allowed to operate, that there are all of the required environmental management plans, social and labor plans, closure plans in place. But that is actually required by the law. It's not really a performance measure. I mean, if you're not doing that, you're not complying with the law. So in a sense, it's an easy target to meet, because it just means that your processes are such that when an application is made that doesn't comply with the rules, you just refuse it. And as long as you do that consistently, you get 100% on that support measure. Then the other measure was the other issue to mention was the 0% achievement on the finalization of the Women in Mining strategy. This has been an issue, a women in mining issue has been dealt with by the Portfolio Committee as a matter of concern over many years. The Women in Mining strategy has been a target of the department since at least 2011. And it was the completion date of the strategy, however, has been postponed four times. It has been put into the annual performance plan again and again and again. This time it's not in the annual performance plan for next year, so one hopes that the process will be completed as promised in this annual report by the 31st of March 2015. The department reports that the number of reported incidents of women being sexually harassed underground has increased. So it's hoped that the strategy will be finalized as promised and that it will deal appropriately with the need for women mine workers to have, quote, a safe and dignified working environment. The other difficulty which I discovered in going through the report is the way that the order of the measures which they deal with differ between the performance plan and the annual report. This makes it extremely, I won't say it makes it impossible, it makes it inconvenient to do your comparison between what's in the performance plan, what's in the report, and also looking back over a period, because many of these things are long term, and you want to see how the department has done over the 5 years of the strategic plan. The Department of Mineral Resources makes it as difficult as possible for you to track those things. The information is in the report, but you have to search for it, and it takes a lot of time to do that. It's difficult to track adjustments to measures over time. It's hard to determine the baseline sometimes. I must congratulate the department for having posted on its website the detailed way in which it calculates each of the performance measures. But it would be so much better if the measures were in the same order, even given numbers that were the same between the different reports. As my next slide says, I think there's a clear improvement in 2013-14 compared with 2012-13. On the financial performance, moving to an unqualified audit, and then also the compliance with the Principal Act. There were problems in compliance with the Principal Act mentioned in 2012-13. In particular, the department was not being sufficiently careful in collecting the results from the mines where they gave their annual performance reports on their compliance with social and labor plans, environmental plans, and so forth. That has gone out of the Auditor General's report. It's a clear improvement. Secondly, standards have been maintained with respect to the five entities over which the department plays an effective monitoring role according to the Financial and Fiscal Commission. So I very much understand the point of view of the Auditor General saying that the department is it has shown important signs of improvement over the last year. The next slide is you don't have, sorry. This is a what I've done here is that I've gone through each of the entities and I've counted up the number of performance measures which they have in each of the years, and I've tried to calculate the extent to which these are achieved or not achieved. So on this if you look at the right to begin with, you'll see that the Department of Mineral Resources has 166 measures. Geoscience 28, MinTech 91, and so forth. So there's a very large area which has to be covered. The percentage not achieved in 2013-14, the 20% threshold was not met by the Mine Health and Safety Council, by the DMR, and by Geoscience, but it was met by the other entities. When you compare it across years, the DMR has basically, its percentage not achieved has stayed just above 20% in both of the years. Geoscience, exactly the same. And I think one must say that in the case of the Council for Geoscience, they did not achieve 39% of their targets, which one would say that's an awful performance. But they are actually one of the best, most capable entities within the DMR, and I'm afraid that their problem is that they set standards for themselves, they set monitoring measures which are just not realistic, and I think that the council needs to be asked why, and this is an issue which the Auditor General has raised several times, why are they setting standards which they can't realistically meet? Because their budget isn't sufficient, because they're dealing with problems with staffing and so forth. I think that this measure, which I've put down here, gives a very false reflection of the situation of the Council for Geoscience, having read their most recent report. MinTech performs extremely well both years, achieving 85% of its objectives. The state diamond trader pulled a fast one by completely changing the way in which it measured its performance between these two reports. A new board came in to existence in 2011, and they changed the performance measures. So you can't really compare the 69% achieved in the previous year with the 81% achieved this year. The South African Diamond and Precious Metals Regulator, they actually gave themselves 100% in both years. But I found there was one measure where they got 96%. So to be consistent, I gave them 97% for last year. Mine Health and Safety Council, also not in the comfort zone below 20% in either year, but the Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate has improved from 77% achieved last year to 81% achieved this year. So this gives you an idea of the great scope of the entities, the numerous ways in which they measure themselves, and the fact that they account to Parliament for how they have dealt with the issues in their annual performance plans. I want to identify, however, some areas of repeated non-achievement. When you look at the achievement of the Department on Measures over a number of years, there are a number of issues which come up again and again. And the first is under Strategic Goal 5, which is to create an efficient and effective development-oriented department and to attract, develop, and retain appropriate skills. This is a problem across government. Staff turnover, the filling of vacancies, employment equity objectives are all difficult issues for all departments, and the DMR is no exception. It is interesting to note, however, that the performance indicators going forward from this point have been substantially altered. So instead of having specific racial targets for the employment of people in as coloureds, Indians, whites, across the department, they are now saying number of affirmative action measures implemented, and like it's four or something. So this indicator, I think, is going to look a lot better next year. The same thing is with the filling of vacancies. They say that a 10%, the target is for a 10% it's a 10% turnover rate, which is a reasonable target given that, I think it's a vacancy rate. Their target is for a 10% vacancy rate. And that is a reasonable, in fact, it's a stretch goal compared with what the achievement has been in the last few years. So I think that the changes in the target which we see in the next performance plan are reasonable. Then is the implementation of management plans. And one of the measures which is used in all of the divisions is the percentage of agreed management plans implemented. In 2012-13, there was 100% performance across all the divisions. And there's been a notable regression in 2013-14, uneven across the departments, but indicated in the table. However, 2012-13 was the year where the department had a qualified audit. And this year, where there seemed to be problems, they had an unqualified audit. So I'm not confident that these measures are actually real. They're not close indicators of the performance of the department. However, it is impossible for the department to turn around the arrow from the downward facing red arrow to the upward green arrow unless it implements every single one of the agreed performance changes. And therefore, I think that this measure needs to be monitored by the portfolio committee, and 100% performance needs to be expected from the department, just as it is when they issue their licenses. The third area of concern, again, is the inspectors, the health and safety inspectors. I'm sorry, you don't have colour. Is it colour? No, it's black and white. The the graph there indicates that the number of posts filled in the Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate has never matched the number of posts provided for since 2001. And there's always a gap of 50 or more, about 50 every single year. We've heard the reasons for this, that the department trains people and they are poached. But this seems to be something which has, it's a long-standing difficulty which dates back to at least 10 years. And one questions whether the new measures, which are described in the annual report, are going to be adequate. They, for example, include identifying 50 people who are going to be given bursaries and training towards the achievement of the qualifications that will allow them to become mine inspectors. So the department is definitely, I mean, it's every year aware of this problem. Whether it's being dealt with sufficient application, I question. The other thing which is an issue is that under the Mine Health and Safety Act, there is a provision for the Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate to actually be made a separate entity under the PFMA, which would release it from the requirement to pay government banded salaries. If the Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate were established as a juristic person, as is provided for in the Mine Health and Safety Act, and assuming that they could source sufficient funds from the industry, it would be more possible for them to pay salaries which are sufficiently attractive to improve the situation of the Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate. Well, that is a question I would put forward. The final comment I want to make, and it is a comment, is that there are three areas which are not well covered, I think, in the annual report. I must say that the Department of Mineral Resources, their reports are fully in line with the formal requirements. They're based on the content of the strategic plans and the budget, and they're very long indeed, over 200 pages. So one has to be cautious about saying that there should be more material in the annual reports. But I want to highlight three areas which reflect on the future growth and impact of the mining industry, because after all, it's fine that the, in some senses, the performance measures are whether the department is doing things right. The other question is whether they're doing the right things. And those are the questions which I think are raised by these three areas. The first is the South African Mineral Resources Administration database, which goes to the heart of the requirement under the MPRDA to allow people access to the mineral industry in a transparent manner, in a responsible manner, where the state is the custodian of the mineral wealth of the country. Now, despite all of the upgrades which are reflected in the annual report, the online system has been criticized for lacking transparency and efficiency. And there are no performance measures in the report that specifically indicate whether the SAMRAD is adequate or not. The questions which I refer to are raised by journalists in Mining Weekly, by commentators, by analysts, who say that South Africa's online administrative system is not up to scratch. It's not of world class. And I think that the transformation objectives of the MPRDA are compromised without such a world-class system. There have been efforts to bring it in since before 2004, and the question is whether the progress is positive or not. The second deals with the issue of the Department of Mineral Resources and the environment, and concerns raised in the press and all over the press by the way that the DMR goes about its environmental management duties in practice. on paper we can see the DMR does all of the inspections, but there's been an amazing increase in the number of mines in South Africa, and an even bigger increase in the number of prospecting rights have been awarded. And this means that there is a greater impact of the mining industry on ecosystems and on communities. The one example I want to refer to is about Mpumalanga. Now, apparently the whole of Mpumalanga is now given up to one form or another of mining rights. And there's an NGO report by the Benchmarks Foundation, which is endorsed by the Center for Environmental Rights and a number of other people, which speaks of the almost total lack of compliance, monitoring, and enforcement by the DMR. I have no way of knowing whether that is true or not. I'm just saying to the committee that this is an area of concern which many communities, many NGO groups, and many environmental lawyers have put forward, that the DMR is not carrying out its regulatory duties correctly. Obviously, maybe they're saying it's not being done in the way in which they would prefer, but it's an area of reflection which I think is needed within the annual report. And then finally, it is the area of legal cases. The MPRDA and the Mine Health and Safety Act brought in a fundamental change in our legal system as it deals with minerals. It's referred to as a systemic change in mineral law. And one must expect that over time there will be a development of case law as there's litigation, as amendments are made to the provisions of the acts and so forth. And I think that it would be appropriate for the annual report to reflect on how these currents of change, which are coming to the interpretation of the MPRDA through the courts, are having an impact on its own goals and on its own functions, whether they are for the transformation of the industry, for providing security of tenure to mining companies, and so forth. In the written report, I mentioned two cases. The one is the Sishen case, which was decided earlier this year. The other, the State versus Mogota case dealing with illegal mining, where there was a call for the Parliament to implement a law to control illegal mining. And the other more controversial and perhaps interesting one is the Benguinyama case, which reached its sort of third round in the courts in September, where the court actually awarded the disputed prospecting rights to the Benguinyama community directly, the minister having refused or failed to do so in the past. Chair, those are the issues I think that the Portfolio Committee can usefully engage with out of the annual report of the DMR.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Nicole. Honorable members, any questions of clarity or comments? Honorable Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is the first time we've experienced a report by a researcher. So I think it's a big step forward for this committee. But can I say, Mr. Chair, it gives it another spin on the annual reports, which is good. I do think, and in particular, my concern has always been, and I think we've only received one briefing by this department, somewhere guesstimate around 2011-2012, on the legal matters, and it was a very glib presentation, which with a reason which I don't know. But the issue concerning this department is continuously in the courts, and there's no, if little, if any, attention given to those matters. So I think quite rightly we should in fact reflect on having better reporting concerning legal matters in the courts upon its finalization, of course, even though it might be on appeal. The concern regarding the lack of the act concerning illegal mining strangely was raised again last week in a different forum, and the judge in fact confirmed that there is no such case law, no such legal framework within which, except for trespassing, an illegal miner could be arrested for. So trespassing would seem to be the most serious crime for which they could, of course, except if they have gold-bearing rock in their possession, in which case they could then be charged for particular offence relating thereto. But otherwise, if they're found on the premise without anything in their physical possession, there's nothing you could basically do. The SAMRAD is the core function of this department, the core function. And all these years, we haven't had, two briefings made on the SAMRAD. In fact, it's the best system around, and I'm glad that DG is here, is a South African manufactured system with this department. A few years ago, I think it was about 5 years ago, told the developer they were not interested, developed their own system, which has gone and caused a moratorium for approximately a year, I think it was, if I recall, due to the system not being able to facilitate all the issues regarding the applications to be made. So the base system, if my knowledge is correct, sits in Canada, because the South African government did not think it appropriate to use a South African developed system for its Department of Mineral Resources, was not interested. And I would like comment from the DG at some stage. That would be my comment. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Larin.
Just a quick comment, Mr. Chair, regarding the performance in environmental management. What the NGO has reported here on coal mines in Mpumalanga is pretty much what I saw last week when I went to Mpumalanga to look at mines. I looked at 5 mines in one day, and of those, it appeared, can't say for certainty because I wasn't in possession of all the documentation, it appeared that 4 of those 5 mines were in breach of their EMPs. So I think this is a big problem that needs to be addressed.
Attention. I have not pointed this out. It's not that I knew you were going to come in. Honorable Pekinin.
No, thank you very much. Mine, Chair, you know, I really wish to say that I wish to follow my colleague when he spoke about this report. I think this analysis will enable us to do our work properly. I think, Chair, you see, it's going to help us when we deal with other matters, this analysis. But present now, I think it's important to carry on with it all the time when we are going to deal with other matters, Chair. But I think now, my own view on this particular matter, Chair. You know, this information of comparison is really needed. We have maybe a special session where we have it each and every when we're going to begin a term or whatever, so that we're able to say, here's the annual report, there's our analysis from it, and then we're able to pose questions. Now, it will be really inaccurate now, at this particular point, to raise particular matters on to engage with it, instead of using this report when the department comes, you know, to report. I think, you know, it's a very good, but we need to kind of have some kind of systematic approach in handling it, I think it is important to do that, because it really assists, but it's a question of timing to me. Thanks.
Okay. If it was not this committee meeting, I would have done something unconventional. But let me leave it. Do you want to respond?
No, Chair, I don't think.
Okay. Look, I think what we should acknowledge, and thanks very much, Dr. Nikon, is that this just gives us a perspective. It's not channeling anyone. We have
look whether is there complementary words or complementary opinions. I think for me, with the AG and this one, it's now up to members to understand and develop its full aspect. I've got no intention to preempt what will be the report of the
let's agree, honourable members, including the point that honourable Larima is making, that that issue can't be exhausted. It will still become relevant as the presentations are being made, so that it doesn't become an issue that is raised here, and where, which I think it's where appropriate when we deal with the actual work of the committee, I think that issue will become more relevant. And I must say that because honorable members have got also the privilege of the oversight that we just recently undergone, they may be able to look at those issues. I think my view, AG and Dr. Nicole, is that it's an issue that we'll have to talk about, especially at operational level, beside here. I think we did last time when we were there, we only invited, we dealt with those issues. It might be very nice to have this complementary interaction outside the actual presentations, so that by the time we go to the presentations, at least there is clarity of purpose, a common perspective between the AGs and the issues that, for instance, there are issues that I think Dr. Nicole has highlighted which directly relate to the AG's work or opinions or approaches on issues, which I think putting those things in a more synergized way would much more be helpful, you know, more interactive process. But it doesn't change that you can still interact with the report that Dr. Nicole also has presented here. I don't think it's something that you would say it's antagonistic in mode, but I think it's an issue that begins also to say some of the things can be made as a consideration in the process going forward. In the final analysis, is an issue that I think it will also assist members in the process of making recommendations and in terms of the report. I'm trying to look at my time. Can I do you a favor? Give you let me give you 10 minutes stretch break. It means you will be here 2:55. Just stretch break, please. You, the department, DG, be ready. Oh,
It's only